Welcome to the Gentle Sleep Podcast, a podcast hosted by me, Claire, a holistic sleep consultant.
And me, Josh, Claire's husband, and just a regular guy.
This podcast is for all of you who have felt overwhelmed by the conflicting information around baby sleep. It's for parents who want to feel empowered to follow their intuition and everyone who has longed for a sleep solution that wasn't cried out. This podcast will help you to feel encouraged, empowered, and better equipped to handle bedtime battles and naptime nightmares with each listen. If you'd like to find out more about me or have access to all of my free sleep tips and tricks, make sure you're following me on Instagram at The Gentle Sleep Coach. Hello, I am here with Vanessa from Reflux Rescue. How are you going, Vanessa?
Yeah, I'm really good. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You are so welcome. So, Vanessa, we're going to get you to tell us a little bit about yourself and how you kind of came to be in this position. But I was so excited to talk to you because I feel like really recently I've been working with lots of families who have really significant issues with baby being uncomfortable, and they've kind of gone to GPs and been told they have reflux and that's kind of the end of the road, or that's pretty much just what they've been given, and then they're sent on their way. And then they've come to me, and when I'm working with them, they're talking about how uncomfortable their baby is. They're screaming when they lay them flat. They're projectile vomiting everywhere and screaming for like 40 minutes after. And I'm like, wow, look, this is happening a lot. And everybody seems to be having a similar experience. So that's what's kind of motivated me to chat to you. Cause I think that, I mean, we'll get into it a bit more, but reflux affects a lot of babies, and it's hard to get good information or even know what some of the avenues are. So thank you for joining us to talk about that. So appreciated.
It's an honor. I'm really, really happy to be here and just help, like generate more awareness around it. So my story is exactly similar to like your clients and every client that I have too, and you know, people in the DM say the same sorts of things. My son had silent reflux, so it's first baby, didn't know what symptoms to look out for. You know, you go to antenatal class, it's all about the birth and not much about after. You hear kind of like, oh, you know, you hear reflux and you think, you kind of, my idea of it was just some kind of like happy spitting. I didn't really know reflux was like a painful condition for babies, right? And then my son had it from, his journey was sort of up and down, but it got to the 3 to 4 month mark, and I thought he was just like hungry, so like but he was, that's when he started to get really, really squirmy after the feeds and crying after feeds, and I was like, everyone was just telling me he's hungry, give him formula. I was taking him to the doctors. I probably went 3 or 4 times, called like the Plunkett Healthline, which is a where, you know, that they look after babies in New Zealand, and just wasn't getting any answers at all. And it got to starting solids, and that was when his sleep went absolute like downhill,
which is so common, hey, with reflux.
And I was thinking, what is it, is it his food? Anyway, and we finally got the doctor diagnosing it as silent reflux. I think this was about the 5th visit, and same thing, it was just like, okay, I think it's a bit of reflux, here's some medication, which was the omeprazole, the proton pump inhibitor. He was like, it might make his poo a little bit green, come back in a month and we'll see. And that was it. Like, that was it. And I went on, he went on it. Things got worse. The screaming was worse. It was so horrific seeing him in that much pain. And then I was following a lot of gentle sleep accounts. I stumbled across another reflux account, and then I found just like this whole new avenue, which is like the holistic way of looking at reflux. So we went down that path and, you know, followed what I needed to do for the next couple of months to get him better. And then I was like, I had this gnawing thing in my soul that was saying, you need to do this. Like, there's no one in New Zealand, or I don't think Australia, there might have been 1 or 2 people that did my course, but there's like a huge gap in our part of the world. There's a lot of ladies in the UK that do it, which is where I did my certification. And I studied it and I loved the course and learned so much. And I was, now I'm here on the other side and helping families and yeah, trying to make a positive impact as much as I can and get the word out there that reflux isn't normal and you don't have to let your baby suffer. So
And like there's other avenues as well, especially if you feel like you've hit those roadblocks, which is what a few of my clients had experienced. Like they've just, oh, well, we talked to the doctor and this is what we were told. And I'm like, but has it helped? And they're like, nope. And I'm like, have we gone back? And they're like, well, they told us not to worry. I'm like, oh my goodness. Like it's, and it's so distressing for parents as well. Cause like you said, like when your baby's uncomfortable and in pain and it's, you can see it happening. It's so distressing. And I know, I know some of the clients I've had, even like their babies have been like really like whimpering and crying, even when they're trying to breastfeed them. And then they're feeling so distressed as parents because their baby's clearly uncomfortable while they're feeding them. It's really stressful for lots of families. So for those of us who aren't up to date with all the ins and outs of reflux, what actually is reflux, and are there typical signs that we should look out for or that we would typically see if a baby is struggling with reflux?
So reflux, basically it's the involuntary regurgitation of stomach contents. So that means, you know, it's uncontrollable. It's coming up into the esophagus from the stomach, so into the throat, and it can either be vomited out or it can just go up to the throat and then be swallowed back down.
Right.
So that's basically what reflux is. And some of the main signs that we'll be looking out for, so it, we look at a whole range of symptoms when we're looking at it from a holistic perspective. But when we're looking at feeding, for example, your baby might be refusing a feed. They might be bobbing on and off the breast. They might be like tugging and clawing at the breast or the bottle. It might just be a real, real struggle to get them to have a full feed. And then after a feed, we'll be looking at arching their, babies often arch their backs. They will be pulling their legs up. But that's some of the ones straight away. And then babies with reflux will often have digestive symptoms as well. So like painful gases, bloating, just like, you know, unable to move that trapped wind through their body as well. And then we can get physical symptoms, which unless you know what to look out for, you may have no idea that they're linked to reflux. But babies may be sleeping with their head at like an extended angle or like be awkwardly twisting their head and neck, which is called torticollis. Some of the other things are hiccups. So that's a sign that baby's swallowing air, milk spilling out the side of the mouth when they're trying to feed. And another really interesting one is a lot of babies with reflux will have a strong head and neck from an early age. And that's because they're tensing a lot, more than other babies.
This is an interesting point because I've seen a lot on just the Instagram world at the moment, people with like 5 or 6 month old, oh, sorry, 5 or 6 week old babies being like, COVID babies are like pandemic babies are like a different breed kind of thing. And like an example of how they're rolling when they're newborns.
Oh my God.
Wait, no, like red flag that like they shouldn't be this tense and stiff. That's a red flag. So interesting that you mentioned that because I didn't realize that was also a red flag for reflux.
It is. And often parents will be like, or people, parents will get comments like, oh, your baby's so strong that, you know, they're already doing great tummy time and things. And, you know, Jake was the same and I was, I had no idea at the time.
And that's a tricky thing, right? Because we don't get this information during pregnancy and you're right. No. Like I remember, even with my own children, holding them and then being like, just really straight upright, like they weren't the floppy newborn that you'd typically expect, and people being like, oh my gosh, look how big and strong they are, and it was almost like the gold standard, or like, oh wow, like you've done a great job somehow by having this strong baby. And it's now that I'm in this world too, I'm like, oh, like so many red flags. So then they had lots of oral restrictions and they were really tight. Oscar had like a forceps delivery that we needed to wear, all sorts of fun things. So looking back, I'm like, oh my gosh, like they were genuinely uncomfortable and tense and tight, and it's just not talked about. So that's a really good point. Definitely. And what I'd love to know as well, I think something that I heard with my own children, and both of them were ginormous vomiters, like projectile vomited multiple times a day, but we're always happy. And everyone would be like, oh, just a happy mama. They're just happy mamas. And I was like, Theo went on to have reflux. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like, because I'd had that experience with Oscar and everyone being like, oh, he's just a happy spewer. In my mind, that was just all that it was. Even though he was a incredibly distressed newborn and baby in general. But because that was the narrative I'd heard for 3 years prior, or actually 18 months, he's now three, but at the time he was 18 months old, I was very much dismissive of that, because he wasn't necessarily distressed after he vomited. I would love to know your perspective on that. Like, is it normal to, I know some form of spilling, of course, can be common, but if we're getting like big amounts of vomit, is that a thing? Like, is happy vomiting
like projectile vomiting like that, and if you're looking at large amounts, you know, like the full feed,
like change your top amounts of vomit, not like they've spilled.
That's not normal, and you shouldn't have to put up with that, and neither should they, you know. That just means that their stomachs really, really fill with potentially probably air along with their milk, and it doesn't matter if they're if they're upset or not, but if it's like a large amount like that, then you should be concerned.
Definitely.
And it's unfortunate that there's all these myths around around reflux and regurgitation. So like you said, a little bit here and there, you know, if like, you know, if they've had a good feed and they're like on their tummy, and they might just, you know, be pressing on their tummy, and it's just like a little tiny bit, but not projectile vomiting. That's a red flag.
And again, just like the narrative that we hear about stuff versus reality is just so interesting. What I'd love to know about is reflux and silent reflux. So are they like, is it all the same, just minus the vomiting, or are they different things? Do we treat them differently? Like, what's the differences there?
So we actually would treat them exactly the same. The difference is that baby is just swallowing it down, so potentially they are having like smaller amounts coming up, which are easier to swallow that down, so they might not have that same, they don't have that same forceful vomiting that baby with general reflux would have. So they may not, for example, have as much pressure in their stomachs for some reason or another, but the way we treat it is exactly the same. So if I was looking at a client, it wouldn't matter if they were vomiting or not. What you'd be looking at, or what I would be looking at, is like all of the other symptoms that are presenting. So it can be harder to pick up a baby that has silent reflux, so that if you know the signs to look out for, you know, and they are like, when you're feeding straight up, like if you're having trouble with feeding them and they're uncomfortable while they're feeding, and then after you're noticing those symptoms straight after, and then they're having digestive problems, you're looking at the whole raft of symptoms, and you'd be treating it 100% the same for both. For both babies.
That's so good. Okay, cool. So is there, I know for me, like obviously with baby sleep, I would say like the biggest struggle I see is families wanting to kind of shift from bed sharing, things like that is a really big thing for families to need to change, and that is a very common one that shows up as really tough for them to kind of tackle. Is there something like that in the reflux world that you see?
For me, it's being listened to, being heard, being understood. They're often pushed away, like dismissed, their concerns are dismissed. You know, they're told that there's all these different myths that baby will just grow out of it, and then but they often, the other struggle too is that I'm looking at the holistic perspective, and I'm up against doctors and pediatricians who are looking at it just from the regurgitation perspective and the medication perspective. So often there can be like confusion about who to trust and who to listen to and what avenue to go down, because there's so much information out there, you know. So if we've got traditional medicine perspective, or we've got holistic, that's, you know, they're on two ends of the spectrum, so sometimes my clients can be confused about that. And then when it comes to things like tongue ties, for example, like Tongue ties have a big contributing factor to mm-hmm. how babies feed, and they can contribute to reflux. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes you may get other professionals lactation consultants who think they're mild or not a big deal. So that can happen too. So it can be really, really overwhelming for parents that are coming to me. They might have been told, it's normal or okay. They might be on medication, or they might have seen another practitioner, and they just have this like overwhelm of information, and they don't know how to find the cause. They just know that their baby's uncomfortable. And another huge one is mum and dad's mental health. You know, they're often sleep deprived. They are extremely stressed out, you know, anxious, probably a lot of, you know, depression, mm-hmm. Just going through absolute torture. And it's a huge struggle for them. So
definitely. And I love what you were talking about, like obviously medication world, I guess, over the spectrum, and the holistic side of things over here. Can you chat us through, like, what does a holistic approach to reflux actually look like? Like, what is your process when you kind of work with families?
So I like to say I work similar to a sleep consultant. So what I have is like a really comprehensive intake form. It's about like 5 pages. So the beginning, I ask for like a summary of just like what's going on now. Yeah. And then I ask a lot of questions about pregnancy, like what kind of medications was mum on, like what kind of stress levels was she under. Mm-hmm. And then we go into birth, like how baby was birthed, were there any birth interventions, C-section, forceps, you know, the whole raft of things. What was their delivery like? You know, what was the stress levels like? Did anything else happen during birth or straight after birth? And if mum's breastfeeding, then I look at a lot of different factors, like has mum been experiencing like mastitis or cracked nipples, like anything going on with breastfeeding. And then we look at, I go into, next is all of the feeding history. So we look at, are they breast bottle feeding, mixed feeding, what bottles are they using, how frequently are they feeding, how much are they feeding. And then I look at, then I go into all of the symptoms. So there's the feeding symptoms, after feeding symptoms, physical symptoms, digestive symptoms, sleep symptoms, and then I also look at some rarer symptoms that are related to reflux or conditions that baby may also have too. And I then get videos of baby feeding and videos of baby crying, so I can see their mouth close up. So with all of that information, I can then pinpoint the underlying cause or causes. And then I formulate like an action plan, a big report. I explain what all the symptoms mean so that the parents have an understanding of this.
Which
means
is so important.
So it's like provides clarity. And then the action plan is, it includes, you know, it could be referrals to see another professional, you know, it might be to get an oral assessment, for example. And I then do like a timeline of action plan so that it's step by step. So we look at the main priority first, like what's the main underlying cause, what we can do to mitigate that. And then also includes a lot of at-home things that parents can do, like changing feeding techniques, exercises for tension and things like that. So so my reports contain like a lot of, I have a lot of visual links as well that are linked to like Instagram videos or YouTube videos, so that you can get a really clear understanding of what I'm writing as so that's it in a nutshell.
That's really cool. So it sounds like you're looking at like all of the possible factors and then addressing how to rectify each of them, as opposed to just one. Let's do this. That's really cool. Awesome. Now let us talk about reflux and sleep, because I certainly see that reflux impacts sleep 100%. Let's have a chat about that. Like, firstly, does reflux in fact impact sleep? And let's chat about why.
It 100% does. So when we're looking at sleep, you know, anatomically, babies lying flat on their stomachs. So if we're looking at regurgitation, it simply means that it's easier for those contents to come up. And then what we also have is when babies are laid flat on their back, if they have any trapped gases in their intestines, that's going to cause more pressure and more uncomfortable symptoms for them there. And also what happens at night is that, like, baby's digestion, and so do adults too, the digestive system slows down. So if you've got any gases or any, like, fermentation that's happened during the day, that can be sitting there at the night, at nighttime, and those uncomfortable gases can also cause discomfort and cause babies to be, like, moving around more and just to struggle to settle. So so we often see babies with reflux struggling to have a good night's sleep. They might be waking up more frequently, which can be super confusing for parents.
So
as a new parent, right, you don't know what is normal and what's not. But and naps may be a struggle as well. That's something that I struggled with, and I just thought it was my baby doesn't like to nap, but it was like every nap was a struggle, you know, like you're soothing them and calming them down. As soon as you put them down, it's like, no, mm-hmm. mama, you're not putting me down. I'm not laying down.
Exactly.
So often parents are left with having baby in a baby carrier all day. Some of them hate car seats.
Mm-hmm.
So when baby's on four or three naps, like, it is so
exhausting.
Brutal. So hard. Yeah.
Definitely. And it's so tricky because, again, like, when we view sleep holistically, we want to think about, like, is there underlying issues that are contributing to this disruption? So many of the time, like, so much of the time, there really is, which I know can be so frustrating for families because they're exhausted and they're depleted and they feel like they've checked something like that off. And then they have me start working with them on their sleep. And I'm like, hey, like, I think that this is really impacting how your baby's sleeping because of these reasons. And it can sometimes be like, well, what are we meant to do? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, like, we really need to address those underlying reasons why they're uncomfortable so that we can see them sleep well. And it can, I know for parents, it can sometimes feel like they're chasing their tail going around in a circle trying to find a solution. So it's been so helpful for me to be able to refer people to you roadblocks as well. And I know so many of them have, like, come back to me and been like, oh my gosh, like, so helpful.
Work with Vanessa.
I know, and they'll email me like a month or sometimes even 2 or 3 months later and be like, all of this is under control and you were right. Like, their sleep just improved like that. Because sometimes you've exhausted all of the sleep in little bunny ears, sleep issues, and still it seems like there's stuff wrong. And it's not even that stuff are wrong, but, like, parents can always going to have that gut instinct, and they'll always say to me, they seem really uncomfortable, or it's like they're in pain, and it's like that they just can't lay flat, things like that, which are always big red flags. Yeah. And the way they're sleeping, like what you were talking about too.
Yeah.
So what I'd love to know, like, with reflux, is there a point where it just kind of disappears and goes away on its own? Or is that not a thing?
Yeah. I mean, in an ideal world, for some babies, it might, like, if they, like, for example, if baby is, you know, like, quite young, like newborn, maybe up to 6 weeks, and they might have some, like, uncomfortable gases and like a little bit of regurgitation, for example, and then they're moving up into the, you're getting up to like the five 6 months old, when they're, like, sitting up and, like, starting to be able to move their bodies more and, like, able to, like, move gases through their body, for example. So if a baby's just having, like, digestive issues, and as their digestive system matures, they might have that ability to break down their milk better and not have those uncomfortable digestive type symptoms.
Yes.
Then they may be great. They may be okay if they've sort of got mild reflux. It's not causing them too much distress. But then on the other hand, if you've got a baby that was born after, like, a long labor, or they had an emergency C-section, you know, and they've got a lot of tension in their neck or their bodies, unfortunately, it can go the reverse. So as they get older, that tension just gets worse and worse, and it's like their body's in a state of stress for longer, and that means that it's going to take more work to get reflux better. So it would depend on like the underlying cause of reflux. Yeah. So if baby's just having some like mild digestive discomfort, potentially that could get better with time. But if we're looking at things like oral ties, that's a huge no, generally not. You would need to be addressing that and getting baby the right aftercare as well. So yeah, that's definitely. Yeah. Okay. I think some babies may, but not all. Most of them, I don't think all.
For sure.
Yeah.
And like, what about solids? I know that sometimes we hear like, oh, if baby's got reflux, like let's start them on solids, things like that. And that can mean that we have little ones as young as like 4 months of age on like rice cereal, which is interesting to me. I'd love your perspective on that as well, specifically for reflux babies as well. Does that help? Because I know that that's an advice. No, I didn't think so either.
No, so it's crazy that doctors and pediatricians are telling parents this, because babies should not be on solids until they are showing signs of readiness, you know, like we know what they are. It's like, are they sitting up? It's generally around 6 months old. Can they hold their neck up? And are they sitting up? And are they showing interest in food? A 4 month old, unlikely to be ready. And if you're putting rice cereal in the formula, the concept of that is like, you know, we're just trying to thicken things up so that it stays in the stomach, it doesn't come up. But like rice is a complex starchy carbohydrate, and that can cause some really nasty digestive symptoms in babies. So it's like would be getting fermentation in the gut, because babies don't have the right digestive enzymes to be breaking down complex carbohydrates.
Especially at 4 months.
No, like they should be on, you know, mum's milk or formula, and that's it. Like it's not going to help the cause of reflux, and it could just make symptoms even exacerbate worse.
Definitely. Yeah. That's always something that I found a bit odd about some of the general advice. That's so true what you said about the signs of readiness. And I know it's such a minefield for families out there. And I have even like in the last 18 months of just working with one-on-one with families seen such a shift of the age of solids starting just becoming sooner and sooner and sooner, really for not a huge amount of reason. Like I know even when I think back to when I had Oscar, he was such a big baby. Like he was 4 kilos at birth and he was off the growth chart his whole life. And so I remember going to like the little 4 month checkup even, and a lot of people had said, oh, you need to put him on solids. Like that's why he's, you know, waking overnights because he's so big. And I even remember then like asking the GP about it, and they were like, no, the only reason we'd introduce solids at this age is if there was like a strong marker for allergies and we needed to do some early introduction.
Sounds like you had a good GP.
Yeah, or if there's like some really significant weight gain issues, and he is not either. So I'm even thinking back to the timeline change in even the last 3.5 years, and it's almost like every 4 month checkup now, it's like they're getting a tick, you can start solids. Which I'm like, what 4 month old is sitting unassisted? Like, surely not.
No. And they're like, this is their digestive systems take up to the time they have all of their milk teeth. So like up to 2.5 years old, like, and it's a gradual curve of what they can digest, you know? And when we're looking at things like rice cereal, that's it. Like you should be waiting till like 2.5 before they have that kind of stuff. Exactly. But it's given out and it's handed out, and
it's so tricky. I actually had such an interesting conversation with this from Renee by Wellness Bone, Renee Brown as well, just like the introduction of solids creeping earlier. And it's of course like you always want to do what is best for your family, but I think the pressure around starting solids or even like that exciting milestone, it's a bit rushed sometimes. And then I think the false pretense that it makes things better, like makes reflux better, will make sleep better, when in my experience like with sleep is going to make it worse for sure, especially the younger they are. And it sounds the same with reflux.
Same for reflux.
So that's good to know, because that's a big one that we see that we see a lot. Now, what I'd love to know is myths. Can we do some myth busting? Yes. So, like, obviously we've heard happy vomiting doesn't exist.
Big one. Another one is, like, all babies cry. So, which is ridiculous because if babies are crying more than they're happy, you know, your baby should not be crying, like, all day. Your baby shouldn't be crying after every single feed. Like, that's not normal and it's not something that should be normalized.
And that's a big one because I actually posted about it on my story today. So Theo, really colicky, refluxy baby, he would scream like he was dying for most of the day. And sometimes it could go for as long as like 5 or 6 hours and I couldn't get into sleep. And it would always, I know it was awful. And I remember with at like a maternal child health nurse checkup, which I guess is kind of probably the same as like Plunkett for you guys. They literally just said to me, oh, he's just trying to strengthen his lungs. He's fine. And I was like, for 5 hours?
Really?
And I think that's a really big one because extensive crying isn't it's not the norm and it is a marker that there's something else to look for. Yeah. I guess like one thing that can lead on to that before we like get back to some more myth busting is the whole like, oh, it's just colic. This is something I got a lot. With Thea was it's just colic, which led me down to kind of, I was like, oh, what do I do? All of a sudden he's on like Infacol, which made it enormously worse, like enormously worse. Is that a thing, by the way?
I've heard that. I didn't use it myself, but I've heard that it can
like gripe waters and
that stuff.
Made it so much worse. And then it was just kind of brushed off as, oh, he's just got colic. He'll kind of grow out of it. And then we kind of, and then it's like, you get to the 3 month mark and 4 month mark and 5 month mark. And some people are still being told that they just have a colicky baby, which basically is just, I guess, a generalization to give a label to something that they can't really explain because there's so many possible varieties of options of what could be impacting it. But is there a point where, even thinking about, I guess if I'm thinking practically for parents, is there like an age cutoff where you'd be like, if you're being told your baby just has colic and they'll grow out of it, they're just colicky. When should that, is there like a line in the set? See, in my opinion, I'm like, as we're moving towards like 14, 16 weeks, I would be very hesitant to accept a colicky diagnosis.
100%.
Do you agree?
I do agree. Yeah. And often babies with colic will end up having, you know, the diagnosis will get changed to reflux just like from 1 week to the other when they'll often just have the same underlying cause anyway. So it's just colic is just given to so many parents that term, and it's not great because they're normalizing their baby screaming 5-6 hours a day. But generally there'll be a reason for that. And you'd look at it the same way as you'd look at a reflux case. You'd look at, why is this happening? And was there something from birth, or is this baby not feeding properly? Are they swallowing a lot of air? In terms of that, the natural digestive immaturity, it is true that younger babies, you know, babies do have a lot more gas and wind in those first few weeks. But what we're looking at is those symptoms, but then do they have all the other symptoms with reflux? And if they do, then you'd be looking at them the same way as it would like a reflux patient, if that makes sense.
That's so true. Yeah. Are there any other like myths floating around out there with reflux?
So the one I said was like, you know, baby putting on weight, which we've covered.
So we can debunk that successfully. Yeah. Like you can have a refluxy baby and they still be big.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah.
The other one is, you know, reflux is normal. And reflux, babies will grow out of it, which we've kind of touched on as well. Those are the main, the main ones. Yeah,
that's good to know. Like
4 or 5. Yeah.
I think that's helpful just to know because again, like, with everything we get so much opinion and I can just imagine like going rocking up somewhere and talking about reflux and then like, oh, they're just a happy vomer, which is my experience, or they'll just grow out of it, things like that. So thank you. That's so helpful. And I guess what is helpful to think about as well is, like, when should people actually reach out for help? Like, is there a point where you'd be like, I mean, for me, I always say to people, if you're having a hard time, we can help, like, at any stage. And yes, there might be certain points where that could be more structured, or you could be able to tackle more, but it's not to say it's not valuable for even earlier on. What's it like with reflux? Like, is there a point where we're like, yes, this is now when it's a good time to consider help from someone like yourself who does more in-depth and holistic support?
It's definitely no time is too early. So with reflux, depending on the underlying cause, things can get worse as baby gets older, so the sooner the better, I think. And saying that, like, I don't see a lot of newborn babies to 6 weeks. I've had a couple of clients come to me that babies about between 6 and 8 weeks, that's probably the earliest. So these babies might be described as colicky, but they are experiencing other symptoms as well. But if you are, if you have a gut instinct that something is going on and you're struggling to find out what it is, the sooner the better, you know. Like, I can, I have like a symptoms list that I send out to people that are unsure, that on my Instagram page, they can always reach out to me. And they can see that whole, tracker, like, symptoms tracker, and if they are, like, seeing symptoms in, like, more than one section, then likely your baby's got something going on, so we can help them. The earlier the better, because the earlier you treat it with the holistic way, you know, it might take 3 to 4 weeks, or it could take a bit longer if you're tackling more than one underlying cause. So it's good to get onto it early, because then your baby can get back to being settled and sleeping better, and you guys, everyone's going to be doing better.
And I guess it is, like, when there's those multiple underlying things, like, I even think back to Oscar and, like, the avenues that we had to go through to get different things looked at, like, oral tires took, like, literally me, like, 6 weeks, I think it was, of him drastically dropping weight, having treatment for jaundice, me being diagnosed with an undersupply, medicated for it, I ended up in hospital with mastitis because obviously he didn't have an undersupply. He just couldn't drain the breast. And it took, and ending up in hospital with him, somebody sending me, multiple lactation consultants. And then at 6 weeks, somebody literally looked at him crying and was like, oh my gosh, this kid can hardly even, like, elevate his tongue at all. And the relief the second we'd had that tongue tie, and he had, like, some cheek ties as well.
Buccal ties.
Rectified was almost immediate. But I think of that journey and I'm like, that took literally 2 months. of torture. And then it was like, then we had to look into, he was, like, screaming in a car seat and he was so stiff. And then we had to look into some birth trauma that he might have had, and some tension from, like, and that took another several weeks. And then it's like, he's 4.5, 5 months old, and we're finally getting somewhere. So I think that's so important, because it's like, the sooner you can get onto it, the sooner you can get onto it, the quicker the process, and the less baby struggles, the less you struggle. And that's the sooner you can get it back on track. So that's
it.
Awesome. Now, if people are struggling with reflux, or even if they think they might, like, I don't know, what if they even think they might, their baby may have reflux, they do have that gut instinct, they listen to this and, like, oh yeah, like, some of these markers, but I've been told it's nothing. Is that the symptom tracker that you're talking about?
Or they can just send me a DM and say this and this is happening, and, like, I can probably pinpoint from what they're saying if they do, but if they're wanting that, then I can send them the symptoms tracker and then go from there, whether they want, you know, more one-on-one help, or whether they want to look at a guide. It's up to each.
Well, this was my next question, was like, if they do that and they're like, yes, we need some more support, what kind of support do you offer that they could reach out for?
So I have three levels of support. So the first one is, like, video call support. So we go through intake form. I create a report. It's normally like 15 to 20 pages. And then we run through that report over a call, and you can ask any questions. So that's like what I said before, like what all the symptoms mean, what the causes are, how you can treat them. And I also do similar to that, but just over email. So if you don't want to do the video call, you can just, I create the report and then we liaise over email and ask questions back and forth. Or the other one is I have a like a guide as well. So that is where I help people help like parents read into what the symptoms mean and help them decipher what the underlying cause is by reading their symptoms and their behaviors themselves. So that's they can do that at home.
Yeah.
And so that covers like all of the underlying causes and all of the different treatment options, you know, and that they're linked up with. The treatment options are linked up with the causes, so it's quite easy to follow. So, yeah, sort of different scales for what people what fits in with people's budgets and their family as well. So,
And the best way to contact you would, I know you've got a brilliant Instagram page, which is Reflux Rescue. I'll tag it in the show notes.
I run through there, or? All through there, and I have a website which is refluxrescue.net. That's got everything that I do and my packages as well. And otherwise you can email me, which is refluxrescuenz@gmail.com.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
And I'll make sure I put that all in the show notes as well. So Perfect. People can just click it and it'll take them right to.
Sounds good.
But thank you so much for joining us.
No problem.
Honestly, the best information and hopefully so helpful to everyone.
Yeah.
And yay. Thank you, Vanessa. That was so helpful.
That's okay. No problem. Thanks for having me.
No worries. We'll chat soon.
Okay. See ya.
Bye.
Bye-bye.